right, welcome everybody to the first episode of Politics here on Rumble. Couple things I thought I would start with. First of all, me personally, I consider myself to the left politically, pretty far to the left by American standards, but by normal standards, just an average everyday democratic socialist, someone who believes I'm not anti-capitalist. Let me start with saying that. There's a lot of people on the left that call themselves anti-capitalist. I'm definitely not that. And the reason for that is there are definitely aspects of capitalism that need to be reformed, but I feel like, I mean, I don't even feel like this. I know that human nature is the problem. It doesn't matter what your system is built around. There's going to be a lust for power and control because that's how humans are. So whether you have communism, whether you have socialism, whether you have capitalism, there's always going to be some dickheads trying to manipulate things at the top. Because they want to hold on to power. And we're going to talk about that today a little bit. This is something that I've been kind of doing tepidly for a while, but I'm going to try to do it kind of more regularly now. I'm a musician, so, you know, talking about politics and doing kind of like citizen journalism isn't really something I ever took seriously, but I really believe that right now there needs to be more of us. I think more people need to have shows like this and be talking, especially on the left, because there's a lot of it already on the right. And it's interesting because I've learned that a lot of people that I thought originally were on the right because of the way that they were framed in the media are not on the right. A guy like Tim Pool, for example, sure, he likes guns. He has a few right-wing leaning views. But overall, I mean, there's a lot that Tim Pool and I have in common. And we'll talk about that later in today's show. So anyway, my name is Road Grimes. Follow me on Twitter at Road Grimes. Let's get to it. So the first thing I want to talk about today is how, especially in the post-COVID world, it seems like the distance of time between something being a conspiracy theory and an actual news story is about 6 months. Recently today, stuff came out. Was it today? It was recently. This Dr. Liana Wen, who was a very strong advocate for vaccine mandates on CNN and, you know, in the mainstream press, put out a piece today talking about how they are overcounting COVID deaths. And this is something that if you talked about 6 months ago, you were, ooh, this guy's crazy. And now it's just accepted fact. Same thing with other items like ivermectin, which we could get into another time. But it's just interesting to me, and I think this is how the press kind of works in modern America, is, you know, I see a lot of this stuff bubbling up on Twitter long before I ever see it in the Washington Post or, you know, on CNN or MSNBC or Fox or any of the major news networks. So it's interesting to me that that's kind of the period of time it takes before a major story goes from being just a like fringe thing to accepted fact. There's another one. This came out in August of last year about how at this point the most of the people that are dying of COVID are vaccinated. So, I mean, that kind of just defeats the whole purpose of a vaccine mandate and really kind of exposes how disgustingly lied to we were. And listen, I'm someone who worked for a long time in advertising, in the advertising industry, the marketing world, and I mean, believe what you want to believe, but 75%, two-thirds of all advertising dollars are spent by Big Pharma, and that's a lot of power. And when you look at the amount of money that they're making from the vaccine and from, I mean, just in general, but from the vaccine alone, they made like hundreds of billions of dollars. And if you don't think that's a lot of control, well, you know, I have a bridge to sell you. So anyway, that's kind of the first point I wanted to touch on is how a lot of these stories, you know, mainly this one about overcounting COVID deaths were originally fringe stuff, and now that's just accepted fact. So a couple months ago, you could have been thrown off YouTube or social media for it, and now it's, you know, being reported in the Washington Post and on CNN. Moving on. Let's talk about the Twitter files and what's coming out with that. You know, it's obviously been proven now beyond a doubt that social media censorship was happening at an alarming rate. And not just the censorship of fringe people, but the censorship of actual, you know, credentialed doctors who worked for institutions like Stanford and Harvard. So what we have here is an evidence of narrative control. And this is something that, you know, one of the reasons I want to do this show is because of that. Because, listen, I worked for the Bernie Sanders campaign. I'll be completely transparent about that. I was a canvasser. I, you know, donated a lot of money to Bernie Sanders and Justice Democrats. I thought, you know, pumping that kind of money into putting normal people into Congress would help change things. It hasn't. But it really became evident to me that censorship was going to be a problem during the Bernie Sanders campaign. And I remember very clearly being banned from Twitter. So when Bernie started winning primaries, you know, at the time I was still stupidly watching MSNBC, and Chris Matthews said something ridiculous about Bernie Sanders supporters and likening us to Nazis. And I think that's the point when I just went, wow, there is no liberal media. These fuckers are all right-wing zealots clothed in, you know, virtue signals. Because Chris Matthews, and, you know, if I can dig up the tweets to show them on screen, I will. I probably can't. But so basically what happened was, I think I had to delete this one anyway. Chris Matthews said some stuff about Bernie Sanders supporters being Nazis, and I said, I hope his stupid head explodes on TV when Bernie wins the next primary or something like that. And I got banned for a week for hate speech or for violent, you know, fomenting violence against someone. So during that time, you know, I had a burner account that I went and kind of like still posted with as another person. But this guy, Malcolm Nance, who's a CIA cutout, basically, advocate for war, one of the new, like, woke, like, hey, I'm not white and I advocate for war, dudes. He came out with this, he had a tweet about his book, and in the tweet he said something about, oh, Trump's head's really going to explode when this drops, you know. He used the exact same language that I did, just against Trump. And so, you know, I appealed my ban against Twitter, and I said, hey, look, you know, apparently I can't, this is a metaphorical statement. Like, I don't really want to see Chris Matthews' head explode, but it's kind of like a metaphorical statement. Like, I want to see him be so frustrated. And this guy, Malcolm Nance, can say it about Trump. Obviously you guys recognize that it's not harmful when he says it, but he's a CIA cutout, so he's allowed to say those kinds of things. And it's for this reason that people on the left like me are pro free speech, because these idiots advocating for censorship, it's going to hurt you eventually. Eventually, the Republicans will take back over the government, and then all of a sudden, you're the target. Right now, it's like, oh, we got to get, you know, and let's be honest, right now, everyone is being called a white supremacist or a, you know, alt-right or right-wing, or like, so they can be labeled as a threat and terrorist, you know, what weapons of the government can be turned on them. And this is what we did to ourselves after 9/11. You know, COVID to me was a big repeat of 9/11. It was just an incident that was overhyped and overdriven with fear-based narratives to make money for some people. I mean, it's beyond a doubt that's provable now. I mean, it was provable a long time ago, but now you can actually say it out loud without being called fringe. So, you know, let's be honest, I'm doing this now that I'm a little bit safer than I was. And I'm also doing it on Rumble because, you know, I do my music and I would rather not lose my channel. So I figured this would be a good outlet for me, this politics channel, to kind of talk about these kinds of things and vent about them without risking my ability to say similar things actually through music, you know. So anyway, moving on. Oh no, not moving on. So I think the point I wanted to make about the social media censorship is we were in lockdowns. So we were in lockdowns for a long time. I mean, it was over a year, right? Like, remember 2 weeks to flatten the curve became like this whole thing. So during those lockdowns, and there's these protests and everything, an election even, the way that you spoke to other people was through social media because you were supposed to be at home locked down. And this is like how the narrative with COVID was controlled so tightly. We weren't allowed to talk to each other. Anyone who did their own research was an enemy. You know, the unvaccinated are, of course, evil people who need to be put in camps. And that's not, you're not a Nazi to think that, of course. Like, you know, you're just a good person. And that's how the kind of narrative got flipped on its head, where all of a sudden people who I once respected, who I thought were like liberal leftists, became these like right-wing authoritarian people who are like, yo, we're gonna force vaccines on you. And it's like, okay, let's walk this back for just a minute. My body, my choice applies to abortion, right? Like, I mean, of course, women should be able to choose what they do with their own bodies, but not for a vaccine. So that tells me one of two things. Either, I mean, several things. First of all, you don't understand science because a vaccine, someone else being vaccinated doesn't protect you. If a vaccine works, it protects you. That's the point of it. Second of all, how does a vaccine work? A vaccine, these weren't vaccines, these were mRNA gene therapy, but a vaccine injects a dead version or a weakened version of a virus into your body to trigger a natural immune response. So these people that were out there like, natural immunity doesn't work for COVID. I'm like, did you fail third grade science? I mean, it's not, it's ridiculous how stupid people got. And, you know, to be a little bit nicer, it's like, most people trust the news. They're like, oh, MSNBC said it, The Washington Post said it, which is a mistake. And I think they had an advantage in that Trump coming out and saying, you know, fake news. Everyone, it's such a huge virtuous signal to be against anything Trump does. So it's like Trump says the sky blue. You're like, no, it's not. It's red. And that's just how liberals became. It was the same thing when Obama was president. It didn't matter what Obama did to conservatives, it was terrible, even though he was one of them outside of being black. That's why it was hard to take their complaints so seriously, because it's like, are you just a racist? Because if you look at what this guy's actually doing, he's doing your policy agenda, Republicans. He's doing all the stuff that you were doing under George Bush, and now it's suddenly a problem because he's a black guy. So, you know, I think the last several years of politics have just, to me, really revealed that there is no right and left in American politics. There's one party. It's pro wrestling. They pretend to be against each other. It's Tom and Jerry. I don't know if you've seen that meme. I'll put it up. But it's basically about how the whole point of Tom and Jerry, and I didn't know this until recently either, is they're friends. But Tom will be kicked out as the cat if he doesn't try to get the mouse. So they have to pretend to fight each other for the sake of the owners not throwing them out. And that's exactly how American politics work. The Democrats and the Republicans, I mean, look at the last 2 years of Joe Biden. What did you get on the left? I did a tweet the other day. One of my most, you know, viral recent tweets was asking, hey, can anyone point to something left the Democrats have done recently? No one could. And I said, since the Civil Rights Act in the 1960s is like the last time the Democrats have actually done anything that's like socially, you know, to the left. Like, everything else, they like, even Obamacare was Bob Dole and Mitt Romney's healthcare plan. You know, Biden just did a bunch of stuff that was ridiculous. Like, and this is the thing that's so crazy about the Democrats. When you look back on this, it's like there was a thing that happened during the Obama administration. Before I move on, they repealed insider trading, supposedly. You know what they did? They quietly pulled that back the day of the Boston Marathon bombing, when no one was paying attention. So that's how nefarious these people are. This is how they operate, you know? And the idea that the Democrats are there fighting for you, that needs to stop right now, because I think people like AOC and the squad are more of a harm than good to the Democratic Party. And this is coming from someone who donated heavily to them and tried to help them get elected and is just so disappointed, because a lot of people look at them and think, hey, there's someone helping me. And I think Chris Hedges said this on Jimmy Dore or something. But he said that these people think that there's someone helping them in Congress so they can kind of like let up a little bit. And it's like, no, they're not. They're not doing anything. And I'm going to show you how gross this is. But so the next thing we'll talk about is so recently a big thing happened in Congress, and the Republicans used their speaker vote to cause chaos. And if you watch the news, I'm sure you saw this. And the way it was framed in the mainstream media is these people are terrorists, they're evil, whatever. But what they actually did was say, hey, Kevin McCarthy, we're going to risk you not becoming speaker in exchange for you giving us concessions. Like, if you want me to vote for you, you gotta come up off it, buddy. And here's a list of the things they got. Things like promises to cut the military budget. Things like the speaker can be voted out with a majority vote. Things like banning insider trading. And if you watch AOC talk about this, she says, you know, she acts like, oh, it's this great thing that, you know, we stuck together while the Republicans were in chaos. No, it's not. You know, honestly, this is something Jimmy Dore and a lot of the people on the left pushed for last year the last cycle 2 years ago, when her and all her, the Congress got reelected and they had a majority. They wanted to them to use their vote for leverage with Pelosi to force a vote for Medicare for All on the floor. And the interference that was run by the fake left and the TYT people and all this is ridiculous. Like, they ran all kinds of excuses. And now we saw the Republicans do it with great effect. So they all have egg on their face. They all look stupid or fake, which is, I believe it's the latter. I don't think that they were dumb enough to think that they believe that what they were saying at the time. I think they were running on interference because they were protecting their access to the politicians so they can have their shows. And it's obvious in the way that they sit and point at everyone else as grifters. Oh, you're just trying to make money. No, this is the biggest like case of projection I've ever seen. You are just pointing at people you're Republicans. That's what Republicans have always done. They're like, ah, gay people are terrible. And then you catch them in a bathroom with a gay prostitute. You know, it's like, it's the thou doth protest Shakespeare thing. But anyway, so I love Jimmy Dore for this reason. And let's show this video of AOC when she was running for Congress. Watch what she says.
The Democratic Party does not do more unless it is pushed. So we need to push them. And they don't like it. I think I annoy them, but but that is our job. That's our job. All of Washington is not incentivized, on the whole, not incentivized to work in actually expediting guaranteed healthcare in the United States. Now, does that mean it's not going to happen? Absolutely not, because mass movement organizing can force it to happen. Do not trust any political party to automatically work in your interest. What the Bronx and Queens needs is Medicare for All. We can do it now. It takes political courage. Start bringing the ruckus on the Democratic Party. That is our job. It's great that everyone thinks these issues are important. We need to make them urgent. This country has only ever changed for the better by groups of people that were willing to put everything on the line for a better future. That's how we got the civil rights movement, the women's rights movement. That's how we got the labor movement, queer rights and marriage equality. It didn't happen by people playing it safe. We have to give it all we got. Don't people realize that the most powerful position you can be in is when you are not materially attached to a position of power? If you're a one-term Congress member, so what? You can make 10 years worth of change in one term if you're not afraid.
Okay, now, watch this video. This is Matt Gaetz, one of the Republicans who recently kind of like used his vote for leverage in Congress, talking about AOC on the Tim School podcast and what AOC was doing this time around. Listen to what he says.
Dude, but we saw you talking with AOC during this whole process.
Right.
Was that something relevant or that you can share?
Sure. I mean, I got caught on camera in conversations with AOC, Ilhan Omar, and Pramila Jayapal, like three people who folks have seen me disagree with more than agree with. With AOC, I was discussing whether or not the Democrats were going to leave the floor and cut a deal with McCarthy, because that would have changed the math on the speaker vote. And so she was actually doing everything possible to make sure that they didn't, and that there were 212 Democrats voting for Jeffries on every ballot.
Wow.
Okay. So now you have that juxtaposed, right? You have that footage of AOC talking about, you know, we got to push the Democratic Party. And then you have Matt Gaetz telling you, hey, this is what AOC was doing. She was rallying votes for Hakeem Jeffries. Well, let's talk about Hakeem Jeffries. Here's a bunch of the stuff that Hakeem Jeffries did. This guy runs a PAC to get progressives out of Congress. And here's AOC literally licking his boots. What people don't realize is the Democrats could have used their leverage during this battle too. They could have threatened Jeffries with defecting and extracted things out of Jeffries. But they're not going to do that because they're a right-wing party and they have you fooled. They have you thinking they're out there, you know, trying to help you, and they're not, you know. And this is why the ire at AOC is frankly warranted, because she positioned herself when she ran as a threat to the establishment, and now she's at the Met Gala wearing a dress that says "Eat the Rich." Like, what a joke. She's a social media influencer campaign at this point. She has done nothing of she kind of like that first, when she first got in, she protested in Pelosi's office with the Sunrise Movement, and that was it. That was all you got out of her. So anyway, you know, again, I'll point back at this tweet that I you know, posted a couple weeks ago, a couple days ago, that kind of went viral. That was like, hey, can anyone point to anything left the Democrats have done recently? Can you? No one can. I think one guy came up with the Clean Water Act in like right after the Civil Rights Act in like the 60s or early 70s or something like that. That was the like most recent thing. The Bill Clinton administration was just a parade of right-wing agenda items. Then we got Bush and Cheney for 8 years. Then Obama came in and everyone's like, yay, we got a black guy. And then he just continued doing the Bush. He killed more people with drones and deported more immigrants than Bush or Cheney did, you know? And so, you know, it's kind of like this idea that the Democrats are left is just such a joke. And what the last few years did with Trump's election was people pretend like half the country's just racists because they voted for Trump. And as someone who lives in Los Angeles, I know black people, and I have Asian friends and black friends and Hispanic friends who voted for Trump. So, I mean, are they racists? Are they white supremacists? I mean, yeah, of course. No. They're cynical, and they're like, hey, we voted for Obama twice and nothing changed. Let's roll the dice on this guy. And I can tell you from experience, I have relatives in the Midwest who are, you know, coal miners and blue collar people who voted for Trump. But that's exactly what they said to me. I'll never forget this conversation I had with my cousin's husband who works in a freaking mine. I said, hey, you know, Trump isn't on your side, right? The guy shits in a golden toilet in a multi-million dollar penthouse in Manhattan. He's not out here trying to help blue-collar people. And you know what he said to me? He said, yeah, we know. We know he's full of shit. But guess what? He's not another Clinton, and he's not another Bush. And I couldn't help but agree. And if you talk to people instead of just judging them from afar and going like, you're a right-wing racist, you'll come to these conclusions. But that's not how we do things anymore. America doesn't do nuance anymore. We don't do, you know... I go back to Stephen Covey, who's one of my heroes. Seek first to understand. You know, the first highly effective habit, the first habit of highly effective people, seek first to understand. Why did these people vote the way they did? It's not because they hate women. It's not because they're racists. It's not because they're MAGA cult members. It's because a lot of them were like, you know what? Like, we voted for Obama for 8 years and nothing changed. Except the tone of the press. And if you look at what's going on with Biden, that's all that's changed, really. He said when he was running, and I quote, nothing will fundamentally change if I'm elected. And it hasn't. The only thing that's fundamentally changed is the tone of the press, because when Trump was president, he could do nothing right. You know, they were constantly trying to slander him and say he was a dumbass and do all this stuff. And now that Biden's president, he can do nothing wrong. It's the complete, and anyone with a functional brain can see this dynamic in action. The guy is literally, I refer to him as like the fossilized vessel for the interest that put him in there, because he doesn't even know what room he's in. It's almost like they wheel him in and he just smiles and stands there. You know, he's not controlling anything. The big business interests that own the country are the ones making all the calling all the shots. That's why we just dumped a couple trillion, you know, $100+ billion into Ukraine with no accountability whatsoever. You know, and it used to be the Democrats that were the anti-war party, you know, or at least the party of like, hey, let's do diplomacy and not kill a bunch of Ukrainians so, you know, Raytheon can make some cash. Anyway. So that actually brings us to the next topic, which is right now what's going on social media is you have the Democrats out there. Like I saw Swalwell blaming the debt on Trump. Trump ran up the debt. Now we have to fix it. How much money did you guys just send to Ukraine? Let's look back over that. What's the figure at right now? I'm going to look it up. I don't even know. I don't even know what the number is right now. Let's just Google it real quick. So, I mean, it's just ridiculous. This idea that Trump caused the debt. And, you know, I don't know if you've been watching the Pentagon can't account for a bunch of money. They continually get audited and no one can seem to figure out like where all the money's going. They're just like, oh, we're just missing all this money. You know, I don't know if you've seen, there's a clip of Rumsfeld right before 9/11, like the day or two before 9/11, like, hey, there's like $3 trillion. We don't know where it went. And then a plane hits the Pentagon and happens to hit like the accounting wing of the. So, you know, at this point, it's kind of like the scam is just so obvious. I don't understand how anyone can't be critical of things like the COVID narrative or, moving on to our next subject, January 6th. So let's talk about January 6th. Okay. When January 6th happened, at that time, we were all on lockdown, right? Remember? Yeah. So most people, unless you were at the protest, most people were still at home, working from home, out of school, all that kind of stuff. So we had to watch this stuff through the lens of the media, unless you were there. So then, you know, immediately it was used as kind of a cudgel to say like, hey, look at these election deniers, right? Well, I don't know if you remember this or not, but the Democrats spent 4 years denying Trump's election and I don't want to go into the Russiagate thing right now, but let's just say if there was anything that they could put him away for, Trump, they would have put him away for it. There's nothing there. And this has come from someone who, like, my background is in, like, fraud detection and advertising and working with, you know, digital ad products and stuff like that. So I know this world extremely well. And when you're reading to the details of what Russia did to, like, influence the election, it's like a micro dot in an ocean of money. The idea that Russia had any influence whatsoever on the 2016 election is a joke. And all of the you know, source material that's used to make that claim is so brittle and so like hilariously like biased and black box that it's very obvious that this was used. It was opposition research. It was used as like a way to delegitimize Trump's presidency and kind of like stalemate him and, you know, not. And the reason for that is obvious too, because Trump wanted to talk to Putin. He wanted to talk to Kim Jong-un. He's not going to say, I mean, he's still a saber rattler. Let's face it. Trump is not good. I'm not on Trump's side, but the reality is the fact that he, like, the press can just lie to you because he's so terrible. And the thing is, it's so obviously because of his stance on war, really. Like, with Trump was willing to sit down and talk to Putin. And the U.S. security state did not want that. And so, of course, the first thing they did was, you know, start accusing him of being a Russian asset and all this stuff. And again, all of the evidence for that is completely, like, been blown out of the water. None of it is relevant. None of it is – there's no proof whatsoever that Russia influenced the 2016 election. There just isn't. And if there was, people would be in jail for it. And people would say, like, oh, what about these indictments? And it's like, even that's hyped up. You look at, like, Paul Manafort as one example of an indictment. He was indicted for something that happened way before the 2016 election. And they just dug into his past and found something and then went on TV and went, look, we got him. We got him. For what? Well, people, once you dig into the reality that it had nothing to do with 2016, you're like, oh, shit. Okay, why did they blow that up? So every single story that people can point to is full of holes, and the entire narrative was constructed. And as you can see now, the other benefit it had, aside from delegitimizing Trump's presidency, was to grease the American mind for what's happening in Ukraine. Hey, we're going to pull out of Afghanistan. We need another place to dump our money. And on that note, here's a member of Congress. Again, this is Matt Gaetz from the Tim Pool podcast talking about how Afghanistan is the new money laundering op.
I mean, peace is not nearly as profitable to those who are in the war business.
Yeah.
I mean, so obviously I have to say it out loud. I mean, to me, our involvement in Ukraine is directly linked to our diminished involvement in Afghanistan. Like, Afghanistan was the money laundering capital of the world for, like, a lot of our lifetime. A lot of that cash was, like, run through Dubai and, you know, Abu Dhabi. And when that was not the corrupt country that we just decided to pour American cash on, like, we needed another historically corrupt country to go pour American military material and cash into.
And gain of function research, too.
And Ukraine fit the bill. And so I don't believe that, like, anyone's really working toward peace. I think that there are very powerful interests that benefit if this is a long-term, low-yield war.
Back to the January 6th stuff. So this was clearly used as a way to, one, get a bunch of money for cops in Washington, and two, censor people again. You know, the reality is, if this had been a Black Lives Matter protest, do you think they would have even got that close to the building? Hell no. They would have been mowed down with machine guns before they even got there. So it's pretty clear. And then you have the whole Ray Epps thing. Let's play some of that footage too. Here's Ray Epps, like this guy Ray Epps, who mysteriously hasn't been prosecuted and definitely isn't a Fed, rallying people to go into the Capitol. Watch this.
Tomorrow, we need to go into the Capitol. Into the Capitol. Peacefully.
And then lastly, like, here's Matt Gaetz from Tim's podcast talking about how they're going to hopefully do some hearings on this. And I hope they do.
We already know, based on the whistleblower interviews that we've done, that there were federal agents and federal assets that were on the ground that day. And what we don't know is the extent to which any of those assets or agents increased the level of criminal acuity, coordinated with one another, or purposefully entrapped folks who were otherwise not wanting to hurt anyone or violate any law in some sort of technical violation of trespassing or crossing some barrier that had existed hours earlier, but that had been taken down. And it's noteworthy to me that it's been the Department of Justice fighting tooth and nail against the release of a lot of the documentary evidence that would answer these questions.
And who was Ray Epps?
Ray Epps is the only person involved in January 6th that Adam Kinzinger will continuously defend. Isn't that something?
And why? I mean, I think a lot of people have assumptions. He's somehow connected with feds, or he maybe testified or something.
Well, there's no rational explanation for how this guy is sending out message saying he orchestrated the activity. Is at every critical point, he's like the Forrest Gump of the January 6th string of events, right? And then when you're able to isolate the people that are pulled off of the FBI's most wanted lists and the people who, you know, seem to be encouraging others and moving others, that like, it's like, you know, Ray Epps did nothing. So they'll go and like raid the home of some like couple in Homer, Alaska, because they think they have Nancy Pelosi's laptop. But this guy who is at the center of the action, it's like nothing to see here. So, you know, I am troubled by the disparate treatment that Epps gets compared to like some, you know, grandmother that wandered past a barricade that then is facing some intense criminal process from DOJ.
So, you know, that's it. That's it for today. Those are the things that I really wanted to talk about. And the last thing I want to do, since this is kind of my first real episode putting this together, is just tell you a little bit more about who I am. I got into politics. I grew up in, you know, kind of a small town. I've always considered myself to be, you know, kind of liberal on the left. We need public health care. We need social programs to help each other. We need a safety net. We need a social safety net in the same way that Scandinavian countries or the UK has now, but might not if American, you know, commerce takes over. But to me, it's like those core things, you know, the U.S. is a joke in that respect. Even if you're fully insured and your wife gets cancer, you can go bankrupt and lose your house. Even if you do everything right, you can go bankrupt. And what activated me in politics was the lead up to the Iraq War. I went to protests. I was one of the, you know, liberal lefty anti-war protesters against Bush. And I despised George Bush when he was president. And I still don't like him. Now he's on Ellen and liberals are hugging him. But the other thing is I love my country. Like I haven't had it terrible, and I'm not one of those people who's complaining. And like I said before, I'm not anti-capitalist. But that means I got to go. You know, spread it around. Follow me on Twitter at Roe Grimes. And that's it for episode number one of Grimy Politics. Stay safe out there.